Hello and welcome to L&G Talks Asset Management. Saturday the 22nd of March marks World Water Day. And today on the podcast, we're going to look at the theme of water through an investment lens. We'll consider how new technology is changing the way that water is used, and also global progress on improving access to clean water. My name's Harry, and today I'm delighted to be joined by Alex Burr, a director and our nature lead within our stewardship team, Eli Piscopiello, senior ETF analyst, and Shichen Zhao, who is a thematic research analyst also in our ETF team. Alex, we've seen some big changes over the past year, but I wonder if you can give us a long-term view of progress that's been made in improving access to clean water.
Certainly, Harry. Thanks very much. There's certainly a lot to unpack in that question. So over the past year, there's been a lot of pressure on the water system in the UK. The government has been moving on that, particularly focusing on leakage, sustainable access and pollution. Steve Reed, the Environment Secretary, recently has been pushing through the Special Measures Water Act, which has passed through Parliament, which is really focusing on increasing accountability and monitoring with companies within the water sector. It also brings an element of personal liability through the Act. In the US, the new government has immediately acted on water. So two of the first runs of the presidential actions focused on water. This was particularly around those damaging forest fires in California, looking at supply of water, looking at sustainable access. Then if we zoom out slightly, if we look globally, there's been a lot of work going on globally, then there are positive signs, albeit significant challenges remain. If we look at the stability point first, we can focus in on regions like the Nile. So for a long time, there's been the development of the Grand Ethiopian Renaissance Dam. So this focuses around access to clean water. And there's been real disagreement and conflict between the Sudanese and the Ethiopians around having access, particularly from the Blue Nile on agricultural irrigation. Yet there are positive signs. So last year, a water sharing agreement was signed between the majority of those countries bordering and included within the Nile. Notable absences were Egypt and Sudan. And indeed in India and on the Mekong Delta, there's similar sort of tensions, but progress being made. When we look at the financial and economic risks, there's been significant process in analysing and understanding those risks. So the OECD came out with a report last year which analysed that 8% of global GDP will be lost as current stands on a business as usual scenario. They also say that the world's food production will be at risk. I should say half of the world's food production will be at risk by 2050.
Thanks, Alex. Like you say, a lot to unpack there. Shichen, I understand that you've been doing some research recently into another huge theme for investors, which is artificial intelligence. And your research looks specifically at the impact of this technology on water consumption. What have you found?
Thanks for having me today. So yes, it's the rapid development of AI is really hard to miss. Actually, in fact, they're around 80% of the big enterprise, they're either using AI or they're experimenting with it. But what is less obvious is that the water consumption associated with AI. So intuitively, we would think it's really hard to link water usage and consumption with AI, right? But you would never think that for an open AI model like ChatGPT, it uses one bottle of water to write 100 words email, which is a lot because there's more and more us using the service. And every time we use a service like ChatGPT, it triggers a vast number of calculations. And those calculations are processed in vast data centers around the globe. It will heat up the servers, which therefore need water for cooling. And apart from the on-site water need in data centers, across the AI value chain, you also have the water demand for cooling power plant during power generation, and also the manufacturing of microchips and semiconductors, which is really important for AI.
Although AI can be a consumer of water. I understand it could also help provide some of the solutions to making data centers more efficient in the way that they are cooled and operate. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, of course. So when it comes to data centers, it's really important for us to know that not all data centers are created equal. Nowadays, the recent design for data centers are more and more focused on the environmental impact to make it more environmental friendly, so also including the water usage efficiency. For example, CalData, a data center developer and operator, has committed to reduce the water consumption usage. And also they have challenged the data center industry to say, okay, we're going to reach the zero water usage by 2030. And also, greatest challenges also almost always bring greatest opportunities. We also observe that there are a lot of water technology solution providers are proactively addressing the issue to improving the water consumption efficiency for data centers. There are cooling systems that are designed to recirculate water and also to reduce the water waste by harvesting rainwater from the sky and also grey water or recycling water from community use.
Ellie, I know you've been collaborating with Xuechen on this research. I wonder if you can expand a bit on some of the other ways that artificial intelligence and other advanced technologies are being used across the water management network.
That's right. Yes, I've worked with Xuechen on this white paper. I invite you to read it as well and take a look. We have written extensively about all of this issue that AI is posing to water, but also, as you say, the other way around. So what are companies doing with data and AI to find solutions? And really, I wanted to give you a couple of examples so you can have a feel of practically what these companies are doing with AI. And to mention a couple, like looking at water management as a whole, we can divide it into two broad areas. On one side, there's water supply. So how these companies are leveraging data and AI to really monitor and address the quality of water, which is distributed to individuals, buildings, commercial buildings and industries. And on the other side, there is wastewater. So what do we do with that extra wastewater? How is that treated before it's disposed of? On the water supply side, there's companies that we follow, like Butter Meter. This is a company that provides analytical solutions and sends real-time, very detailed information to utility companies. And a couple of this company has actually highlighted a couple of very high growth areas for its revenues, which are software as a service. So really using data that is in the cloud and working with the Internet of Things, so IoT sensors across the whole pipeline to monitor water quality and send information to utility companies so they can optimize their operations and also more safely run their infrastructure. But then another area of growth they highlighted is the advanced metering infrastructure. And this is, I would say, a step ahead from automated meter reading. We know things have changed a lot. I remember when I was a child, every now and then my dad used to wake up early in the morning and put a post-it note by the door for the water guy to come and collect the reading. Of course, that doesn't happen anymore. And now with the advanced metering infrastructure and solutions provided by these type of companies, Butter Meter is managing to collect data as frequently as every 15 minutes and send this data to utilities 4 times a day. And this is very important, taking this into the context or the perspective of a company from its financials perspective and from an investor point of view as well, because there's a very, very high amount of water that is lost, that it's not counted in as revenue. This is non-revenue water because of leaks and poor quality water. And to give you a number, the Environmental Protection Agency in the US has estimated that only in 1 year, the amount of potable drinking water that is just lost is about 6.5 trillion liters in just 1 year. And that's the water that we would drink, the whole world would drink, in 1 year almost. So it's an impressive number. And from a revenue perspective, that's about $2.5 billion every year, which is basically what United Utilities, one of the largest utility companies in the UK, made in the last 12 months in terms of revenue. So it's very important to look at metering to identify leaks, identify non-revenue water, and improve the quality of water, sending this data to utilities. So this was the first point about the supply. And then there was a whole other area, which is, as I said, the water, the wastewater and water treatment. There's a company called Hauma, which has a lot of operates through a lot of subsidiaries and other smaller companies. One called Minicam actually deploys robots into pipelines to look at wastewater. So they monitor the amount of sludge water to identify any blockages early on that need to be fixed, so that utilities can identify this very early and make plan for changes.
Thank you for the detail on the ways that technology is being used. I wonder if you can give us some forecasts around the projected growth of these different parts of the water management universe.
Yes, so the water technology market is expected to grow at a compound annual rate of 32%. And looking at data from the European Patent Office, which gives us an indication of where research and development is going in, out of all water-related international patents, over 60% of them are for water technologies. So really, really, really important. And for looking at specific companies, again, what does this mean for investors and where do we see growth? You mentioned Ecolab already, Shichen, and actually they're planning to increase breakthrough innovation revenues to 50% of their total revenues. And this is revenues that comes from solutions for data centers or microelectronics manufacturing, and therefore ultra-pure water.
Ultra-pure water, can you explain what that is for us?
Yes, so it's very, very pure water. So it's water where all the contaminants are removed. There are different types of ultra-pure water because it's used in many, many industries. So from pharmaceuticals, where it's used as an ingredient as well, as cleaning agent. So it needs to be cleaned from microbes, viruses, or specific contaminants. But it's also used in industry, so for cleaning semiconductors, make sure the chips don't fail, and even in the for steam production in the energy sector. So there's companies that develop these solutions, such as Ecolab. And in terms of growth as well, Organo, moving on to Japan, we look at companies internationally, and their electronics are expected to increase double digit. Why does this matter? Because they supply water treatment equipment to clients such as TSMC or Sony that are really ramping up the orders for semiconductors. A final area of growth, I would say, is desalination. So this is a market that is expected to double in the next 10 years. Companies are using AI here also to understand where a desalination plant should be built. Once that's decided, what technology they should be using, membrane, as you said before, or thermal technologies, and then give info on the predictive maintenance.
Well, Ellie, Shichen, and Alex, thanks so much for taking time to talk to me today. If you'd like to read Ellie and Shichen's white paper on all things water technology, check out LNG Blog's Asset Management, where you'll also find thought leadership from our stewardship team. And thank you for listening.